You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good morning. Happy Tuesday, everyone. Welcome into First Take. Christine Williamson here for Molly. You saw Stephen A, you saw Shannon, you saw JJ. Good morning, everybody. How are you guys?
Good morning, good morning. How y'all doing? What's up, man?
Great morning.
What's up, man?
Great morning.
That's right.
Great morning.
Exactly, exactly.
Perfect, perfect.
And Stephen A, you like the teal Brioni, huh? You like this?
It's all right. I mean, it looks good, Shannon.
Don't
it
do
looks
that.
Good.
Don't
it,
do
it,
that.
It looks good. It looks good. Nah, they need to switch the background just a touch because I think that you like blending in with the background and it's not enabling your jacket to stand out a little bit more. But it's just me.
It looks
it's
like
just
it matches. It looks
it's just
like it
me.
Matches.
It's just me. You know what I'm saying?
As a matter, you keep talking. I'm gonna do the show without the jacket. Yeah, I mean, how that bleed in?
Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. Let's roll.
Let's get to it. In his first game since scoring his 40,000th career point, LeBron James almost got a triple-double before letting the bench play in the final 6 minutes of the game as the Lakers beat the conference-leading Thunder 116-104, the team's 10th victory in 14 games. Now, the West play-in standings are tight with only 2.5 games separating the 10th-place Lakers and the 6th-place Suns. The Lakers' playoff chances are up to 60% for ESPN analytics. And a reminder that the 6th seed gets to avoid the play-in completely. AD, how are you feeling about this postseason?
We don't really care what, you know, CBN. We've proven it last year. It doesn't matter. I think this goes like with anyone. You know, you just try to get in, and then, you know, playoffs is a different animal. So, you know, we don't look at it as, you know, we'd rather have this matchup than this matchup. You know, for us, it's just about getting in and tackling each opponent.
All right, Stephen, I'm going to start with you on this one. Do you think the Lakers are a legit threat in the West?
No, not at this particular moment in time. And the reason why is because I was just in L.A. Saturday, JJ, you saw me there. You know what I'm saying? You were there, you know, doing a great job calling the game. By the way, congratulations, you, Doris Burke, Mike Breen, all that other stuff.
Killing it.
You look so happy. You look so happy, JJ. You know, I mean, Shay, he was there, I was there. And we saw the Lakers once again fall to the reigning defending NBA champion Denver Nuggets. Can't beat them. Lost 8 straight. How am I supposed to consider you a serious threat when the reigning defending NBA champions continuously abuses you at every turn? I understand that the Lakers could beat almost anybody else. I get that part. And I guess because of that, you can label them a contender per se, a legitimate threat in the West. I just don't feel that way. I'm not sold on them right now. And I could be wrong. I understand that. But I just don't feel like I'm too sold on them right now. Even though I look at them last night and you beat Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who didn't have the greatest game, and the Oklahoma City Thunder, I'm looking at them. I know you what you've done against the Clippers this particular regular season, but I've seen the deficits that you've come back from. I just look at the Lakers and I find myself saying, JJ and Shai, I'm like, yo, they can ball. I get it. They can't beat the Denver Nuggets. That's their kryptonite. And to me, that's the measuring stick for me. I just look at them against Denver, and to lose 8 straight to the Denver Nuggets is just bothersome for me. And if we're talking about a legitimate threat, well, the reigning defending NBA champions are in the West. You got to go through them, and you've shown no willingness or ability to beat them. That's where I'm at with it, guys.
So let me ask you a question. Are there 7 other teams like the Denver Nuggets? Now, they've beaten OKC Thunder, who was the number 1 seed going into last night before they lost to the Lakers. Now the Minnesota OKC Thunder was the number 1 seed. Now it's the Timberwolves having won last night and OKC lost. They've beaten OKC 3 times in 4 meetings. They went on the road and beat the Boston Celtics in the Boston Garden minus LeBron James. They beat Utah without LeBron James. So now they beat the Clippers down 21, and they're not a threat. They still have 2 top 10 players. AD, when AD is on, and he was on last night doing what he does, LeBron James goes without standing. We don't need to say anything about him. How can you say that they can't beat? Obviously, the Denver Nuggets is a different animal. They seem to have had their number. But are you telling me in a 7-game series they can't beat OKC? That they can't beat the Clippers?
No, I'm not telling you.
That they can't beat some of these
Right.
Would that make them a threat, Stephen A?
I just told you. I told you I was leaning on Denver. I'm just so focused on the fact that they've lost eight straight to the reigning defending champions. Okay. It makes me lose faith in them. But I'm not disputing anything that you're saying about anybody else.
That's why, because of the way they played against OKC, and we know what OKC represents, they were the number one seed going into last night. Do I believe they can beat Minnesota in four in a series? Absolutely. Do I believe they can beat the Clippers? Absolutely. With D'Lo playing like he's played since the trade, since all the stuff about the trade, they absolutely, and this starting lineup with Rui Hachimura, they absolutely are a threat in the West. Yes, I believe they are. We know what Denver does to them. And, hey, that's a different animal. AD's going to have to step his game up and probably give you 30 and 15 on a nightly basis. But, hell, we saw him give you 40, and they still lost. So Denver might be a different animal. But I still believe they are a threat in the West because I believe in a series they can beat every other team not named the Denver Nuggets.
Look, as of right now, I don't view the Lakers as a legit threat in the West. But let me preface all of my points by saying one thing. If you're a top four team in the Western Conference right now, there isn't an easy first round matchup. Regardless of how seeds 5 through 8 shake out, all 10 teams right now in the Western Conference that are in the playoff or play-in hunt right now are legit basketball teams. They are good basketball teams. We've seen the turnaround from the Golden State Warriors since Draymond Green came back and they inserted Jonathan Kuminga in the starting lineup. They went small. The Lakers' season, as it pertains to them, has turned around because of three-point shooting. They are still not a good defensive team. It starts with that for me. They are not a good defensive team. And if you look at their starting lineup, you go through a first-round series, a potential second-round series, a potential conference finals. Who is their wing stopper? You say Jared VanVleet. That's great. Their season turned around because of three-point shooting. So now you're sacrificing your offense, what has helped turn your season around if you're playing Jared Vanderbilt big minutes. You go down the stretch of that game against the Denver Nuggets. This is what concerns me. Austin Reeves, D'Angelo Russell at the point of attack. I think those guys have competed. They are just not great perimeter defenders. So now all of a sudden you go through, again, multiple series in the Western Conference. You're asking LeBron James, like he did in the fourth quarter against the Clippers last week, to guard Kawhi Leonard for 7 games. That's asking a lot of LeBron James, plus all the stuff he has to do offensively. I'm not an overreaction person to one game. And I know they won the season series 3-1 against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Oklahoma City had a tough game Sunday night in Phoenix. Then they turn around and they've got to play the Lakers on a back-to-back. They had the worst shooting first half of their entire season.
Yep.
They are a legit threat. I think Minnesota's a legit threat. I think the Clippers are a legit threat. But we can sort of stop the entire conversation when we talk about them winning the Western Conference, the Lakers winning the Western Conference because of what Stephen A. said. I do not think
that wasn't
they
but
can
that
beat,
was, but that wasn't
they can
the
beat
question.
The Denver Nuggets.
But see, why do people make all these concessions? Oh, it was a tough back-to-back. It was a this or that.
I'm not
you make concessions for every.
I'm contextualizing the loss last night, Shannon.
I know you always do a great job of contextualizing, but let me speak. The problem that I have with you and others is that you make concessions for every other team in the West, not named the Lakers. If the Lakers had lost on a back-to-back, you would have said they're old and tired. Well, let me ask you this. Who are Phoenix wing stoppers on the defensive end? We saw LeBron hunt Kawhi Leonard. We saw LeBron James do what he did. Who's going to guard LeBron James for the Clippers? Who's going to guard LeBron James
LeBron
for Phoenix?
LeBron James didn't hunt Kawhi Leonard in that fourth quarter. Clippers switched more than any team.
They put him in the pick and roll.
They put Daniel Tice on LeBron James in that fourth quarter. He hit 2 transition threes. They messed up the switch on Horn's chest. Then he hits 2 transition threes. Then he hits a 3 over Daniel Tice. Now all of a sudden they're forced to double. He was not hunting Kawhi Leonard, Shannon.
Let me ask you a question. If Kawhi Leonard is what you said, why didn't he fight harder over that pick? See, that's what Kobe did. That's what Jordan did. That's what LeBron did when he was in his prime. He fought over picks. So answer that question, Mr. Contextualization.
Shannon, you're going to have to ask Ty Lue that question because, again, that is their defensive strategy.
I don't have Ty Lue in front of me.
That has been the strategy for the Los Angeles Clippers. I'm telling you, that is the defensive strategy for the Los Angeles Clippers. He is comfortable switching his bigs onto perimeter players. I played against the Clippers in 21. I was injured, rather, but I was on the Dallas Mavericks for 7 games. He switched Zubats onto Luka. He was comfortable living in those matchups. It's not a question for me. It's not a comparison to Kobe and Jordan. Like, the whole thing with the NBA right now, Shannon, let me explain something to you. The whole thing with the NBA right now is exploitation of matchups. The smartest coaches look to exploit matchups. And that's all the playoffs is.
That's what Mazzulla's
doing. That's all it is.
Right?
That's what Joe Mazzulla is so great at. That's what the best coaches are so great at. They're looking to create advantageous matchups and then exploit that. Put two on the ball, whatever it may be. So your question should be for Ty Lue. Why do they switch so much? I don't have the answer. That's his defensive strategy.
Let me say this, Shigar. First of all, you're right about the Lakers defensively. You're right about the Lakers defensively. They're 21st in defensive efficiency right now. I don't like that at all. I got to look at that. Secondly, I'm not getting caught up in what transpired last night because I've seen Oklahoma City. I've never seen Oklahoma City look this bad this season. Now, I haven't seen every one of their games, so if I missed one, forgive me. But I haven't seen them look as bad as they did. They're tired. They just looked lethargic last night. And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, what was that, his first time in about, what is it, in the last 8 games or so, he didn't score at least 30. And we know they go where he takes them. So I take that into consideration as well. But, Shannon, it's nothing wrong, because you do this, Shannon. There's absolutely positively nothing wrong with me looking at one team. Looking at one team, Shannon, and going like this, yo. They can't beat those guys. Now, I understand that, you know, theoretically speaking, look at them. If you're in the mix outside of Denver, you look at everybody and you say to themselves, they can be had. I could look at Minnesota and look at them as an elite defensive team who are not that great offensively, but against the Lakers, because the Lakers are so deficient defensively at times, with Minnesota being able to exploit them offensively potentially. We know how elite Minnesota's defense could be, so that might neutralize the Los Angeles Lakers. So that's a potential loss. The Clippers, obviously, is a potential loss. OKC is no joke. You can't summarily dismiss them. If Bradley Beal gets back healthy with KD, with Devin Booker, who knows what that can be. I'm just looking at the Los Angeles Lakers, and I say to myself, damn, when you lose to a team like the Denver Nuggets 8 straight times and you show no ability to figure them out whatsoever, that does compromise my level of faith in you, Shannon. That's what I'm saying about the Los Angeles Lakers. Every other point that you're making about the other teams the Lakers could go up against in the West, I get that, but I'm looking at them against the team that swept them. And you're still getting your ass kicked by them all the time. That bothers me.
So let me ask you, so if they make it to the Western Conference Finals, you wouldn't deem that as a threat? Now, if they go out in the first round, that's one thing. But if they make it all the way to the Western Conference Finals, as they did last year, as the 8th seed, that's still LeBron James. That's still Anthony Davis. And you're right. If they can shoot the ball like they did. Look, I get told, now see, this is what I get. I get told nobody really plays defense on a nightly basis. It's all about exploiting matchups. It's all about putting the ball in the basket. Now, all of a sudden, the Lakers don't play defense. Are they the only team in the Western Conference that doesn't play defense?
Well, I would tell you, I would say this to you. Coach Darvin Ham, who I spoke to Saturday night, he's very concerned about how they've been playing defense. And he can't wait for Jared Vanderbilt to get back. And when JJ brings up Vanderbilt, and when he brings up that bringing back Vanderbilt might compromise them offensively while elevating them defensively, that's one of the things that the Lakers are going to have to figure out. I don't think any of us can escape that.
Shannon,
I'm concerned about his lineups. Go ahead, JJ. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, as it pertains to the Lakers, like you can do sort of breakdowns on each team, right? What they're good at defensively.
Yeah.
What they're bad at defensively. So you're talking about this is where again, and I don't want to go over people's head. I'm not trying to be like smart here, but some of the modern NBA, beyond just like, hey, people don't play defense, offenses are so good, there is a math element to this. Mm-hmm. So as it pertains to the Lakers, they don't take a lot of threes. So they're behind the eight ball a little bit there.
Okay.
They give up a lot of threes and teams shoot a high percentage against
them. They do that.
They're bottom three in the NBA and giving up threes, and bottom eight in the NBA and 3-point percentage for their opponents. They also don't defend the rim. They're a bottom five team defending the rim. Anthony Davis has been excellent defensively this year.
No one.
Outside of him, they can't defend the rim. Right. So in the playoffs, if you're dragging Anthony Davis out into space, I have question marks about their defense, and I think that's fair.
All right, we got to leave it there. Move on to the NFL. JJ, we'll see you a little bit later.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Brightside breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Yesterday, the Broncos informed 9-time Pro Bowl quarterback Russell Wilson that they plan to release him. It's a move that ends a tumultuous 2-season run in Denver. Wilson released a statement thanking the city of Denver, several teammates, the team's cafeteria workers, and VP of player development, Ray Jackson. He did not mention head coach Sean Payton, GM George Patton, or the team's ownership. Now, the Broncos will absorb a massive dead money cap hit after releasing Russell Wilson of $85 million. That is the largest known dead cap hit ever. The 5-year extension he signed with the Broncos was set to start next season, and now he won't play a single game on it for Denver. We got Robert Griffin III joining us now.
RG.
Hello, sir. Long
time. What's up, Stephen A? How you doing, brother?
What's up, man? What's up? You see Shannon with his teal jacket on under the Brioni jacket. You know what I'm saying? I didn't know it was Brioni. He told me that. I didn't know. He told me that. You told the world already.
My bad.
All right, Shannon, I'm going to start with you on this one. Who is the most to blame for the mess between Wilson and the Broncos?
What we thought was going to be a marriage made in heaven, because the Bronco had a nice, talented group of receivers. Russ could throw the ball extremely well. It turned out to be a match made in hell. For me personally, I thought Russ came with the wrong attitude. I think he wanted things that he never got in Seattle, concessions that the Broncos made early on, because they hadn't had a quarterback of this caliber since Peyton Manning left. And so it was unknown to them, and they might have thought that this is what quarterbacks do, that they have an office in the building, that they're able to come in a different entrance, and they're able to get parking spots, X amount of parking spots at the stadium. I just don't think he ingratiated himself with the team that much. I thought it was a bad hire from the beginning. They hired Nathaniel Hackett thinking they were going to get Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers did what he's supposed to do. He got his guy a head coaching job and went back and got $50 million from the Green Bay Packers. I don't believe, me personally, and I could be wrong, and if I'm wrong, I apologize, listening audience, that Aaron Rodgers never, ever intended to play for the Denver Broncos. What he did do, intend to get his offensive coordinator at Green Bay, a friend of his, a job as a head coach in the National Football League. And he did just that. But when Sean Payton comes in, he hears of all the things that Russ has going on with the team in the office and the this and the that. And I don't need to get too far in it, because that's neither here nor there. He never, ever gave Russ a second chance to win him over. He came in with this ideology. He's like, how could you? This is not team building. This is not what a team. Players do not separate themselves from others. And it rubbed him the wrong way. And so by that, so with all that being said, we've got to stop this notion now that Russell Wilson played well. Russell Wilson did not play well. And for the amount of money that he got, $124 million, a lot of the stats that he piled came in losing efforts. So for me, it's like, Stephen A., we hear this all the time, Stephen A., somebody has to give up $20, $30 million in a divorce and they say, man, No. If it's over and you're ready to move on, separate ways. There's not enough money to keep you in a situation in which you're unhappy. I think Russ needs this and the Broncos need this. But Russ didn't live up to his obligation, and I think the Broncos organization failed Russ in the beginning by hiring that guy that had no business being a head coach or his offensive coordinator.
Go ahead, RG3.
See, yeah, Shannon, this is why you were one of my favorite players growing up, because, like, not only you're funny and great at what you do, but you also going to keep it real. And that's where I think people are looking at this from the wrong perspective. Russell Wilson got paid $242 million to lead the Broncos to Super Bowls. But why would you invest as much as they did into him, trading five draft picks and three players and all the other things that you gave him to not fully go all in on him? Hackett was hired, like you said, to bring Aaron Rodgers there. But he didn't. So what did they do for Russ? They paired him with a first-time head coach, a first-time GM, a first-time play caller, and a young roster. They wanted Russell Wilson to go out there and do what Matthew Stafford had done and win a Super Bowl in year one, and do what Tom Brady had done with the Bucs and win a Super Bowl in year one. But they didn't give him that Super Bowl supporting cast. When you look at Russell Wilson there in Denver, you gotta be good at something. And I'm not talking about Russ. I'm talking about the Broncos in general. You can't be bad on offense, defense, and special teams. You got to pick one. No one in the NFL right now is going to the Super Bowl and doing great things without having a great supporting cast. The Kansas City Chiefs, they win the Super Bowl this year. They're a dynasty now. But their offense wasn't as good. But they had the number two defense in the NFL. So when I look at all of this, I say to myself, who did Russell have to lean on when he got there, especially when Sean Payton came in? Sean Payton's Jays? Nah, they're really cool, but Sean Payton never wanted him at any step or any point in this entire process. So I think if you're talking about an $85 million dead cap hit, guys, Shannon, you've been around the game for a long time. Stephen A., you've been doing this for a long time.
I have.
$85 million? Who did this man kidnap? Chelsea Clinton? Come on, man. The fact that they did that hampers the team. I think they would have been better off with Russell's production. I do think he played good this year, Shannon. He just didn't play to the level of what they paid him.
Look, Stephen A., before you go, let me say this.
Go ahead, Stephen A., before you go, let me say this. Sure.
If they're willing to take an $85 million cap hit, that tells you everything that you need to know.
That's where I was going.
About what they think about Russ and why they're willing to move on.
That's where I was going. You know, Broncos release Russell Wilson. And basically what this question is, who's most to blame for that situation? RG3, it's Russell Wilson. It's Russell Wilson. 11-19 as a starter. 11-19 as a starter. No playoff appearances in 2 years. Let's throw out this stat. First three seasons in the National Football League, Russell Wilson was on a rookie contract, made $2.2 million playing on that rookie third-year contract. Led the Seahawks to a 6-2 postseason record, which included two Super Bowl appearances and one Super Bowl championship, right? Do you know what he's done since the 9 seasons since, Shannon? RG3?
What?
3-5 in the playoffs, without advancing beyond the divisional round in 9 years, and he's been paid over $264 million. So there's something about, in other words, before he arrived in Denver, there was evidence that once he got his money, he wasn't the same. That's what I'm trying to say. So then you come to Denver.
Yeah.
Let's take into account and dissect, RG, what Shannon pointed out. And Shannon, listen, let's keep it real here. This is a three-time Super Bowl champion. Sure. Where was a couple of those Super Bowls? That was in Denver. I've been to Denver. Look, why the hell would I be in Boulder, Colorado? All right? I went down there because of primetime Deion Sanders, right? That ain't too damn far from Denver. All I know is that when I strolled into downtown Denver, they parted the Red Sea. All of a sudden, reservations were easy to get. People were so nice to me. They saw Shannon Sharpe. I mean, you know, I'm looking for his damn statue, okay? At Denver. His brother's deified in that city, all right? So we got the – I'm on radio with Stink yesterday, Mark Schlereth, our former colleague here at ESPN, doing great work in Denver. What's the first words out of his mouth? Tell my boy Shannon I said hello. Everybody loves Shannon in Denver. So we all know that when Shannon Sharpe, America, listen to what he ain't saying, because he knows. He knows. He just ain't going to say it. Well, damn it, I'm going to do it for him. Russell Wilson rolls up into Denver, all right? Not only did he roll up in Denver, he rolled up with Sierra. So guess what? You got people feeling them. They like that. They like that. Come on in. What does he do? You got about four different parking spaces. You got side entrances. You got your own office, okay? You are literally feeling yourself in a way that distanced you from teammates. I'm telling you what they told me, RG. I don't know. I haven't spoken to RG. I haven't spoken to Russell Wilson about this. But you can ask Shannon. You can ask anybody. This is what I have been told. He was there. There are quarterbacks that get preferential treatment. Most of the stars do. But not all of them abuse it to the degree Russell Wilson was accused of abusing it. And that was one of the reasons you saw dudes looking at him side eyes, or in one case, somebody walking up into his face on the sidelines and getting at him, upset that one of the players got traded away for him, because you looked at him and you said, yo, this is not the person we thought we were getting. Now, I'm not casting any aspersions on Russell Wilson. I don't know him like that. He seems to be a really nice guy, but I'm telling you, there were a lot of hits about his persona, his temperament, his personality that were just as glaring in a negative way to people as his performance. That's just what they're saying.
And in celebration of Women's History Month, here's today's trivia question. Who holds the record for most goals in U.S. women's national team history? The answer, after the break.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Now, for the answer to our trivia, Abby Wambach is the all-time leading scorer for the U.S. Women's National Team with 184.
I'm looking for somebody who has that thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sean O'Malley is that thing.
Gotta raise the bar.
When I land those big shots, I'm gonna take you out.
UFC bantamweight champion Sugar Sean O'Malley and Marlon Chito Vera will meet for the second time this weekend. The pairing is a rematch of a contest that happened in August of 2020 when O'Malley was a young, rising, undefeated prospect and Vera was a 23-fight vet who had yet to break into title contention. Before the fight on Saturday, in the main event of UFC 299, O'Malley joins Stephen A. and Shannon right now.
Sean, thank you for being on the show, man. I've been looking forward to this. You wanted this fight. You're 17-1. You're the reigning UFC bantamweight champion, as she just pointed out. You wanted this fight when others out there are saying they were more worthy contenders. You're 17-1. You've got one blemish on your record, which you say really, really shouldn't be there. Tell our audience why you wanted this particular fight against Chito Vera.
It was a big rematch. It's the biggest fight in the division. I want to make a lot of money, and like I said, it's the biggest fight in the division. And Chito was that guy. It just made sense. We fought on the same night I won the title. He won a boring fight, and it all came together just perfectly 3.5 years later.
But I'm asking a question because most people say it's not the biggest fight. They're saying that he doesn't deserve to be in the ring with you. They are worthy of contenders for you, that this guy didn't necessarily deserve this shot, but it was important to you to have this particular fight. That's why I'm asking why.
Yeah, I could agree with that. You know, there was more deserving opponents, but the biggest fight as far as pay-per-view, the storyline, it was Chito Vera 100%. I mean, Merab's, you know, he's doing his thing. He's not necessarily, you know, a massive star. Not that Chito is a massive star, but I do think he's a little bit bigger. The fight itself is just a bigger fight. So in this scenario, this is the biggest fight.
Go ahead, Shannon.
Sean, as you're walking in as a champion, what's going to be different this fight against Chito that you took into the fight the first time that you fought him? Because now you're a champion.
Yeah, I mean, it's same rule set, five fives, a couple extra rounds this fight. Last fight obviously didn't play out the way I wanted it to. But, you know, watching it back, it was going the way I wanted it to. A little nerve thing happened right there. And I got drop foot, and the rest is history. But, you know, this fight's going to play out the way the first fight was about to play out.
You're a champion now. What has changed for you since you've become champion? Talk about how life has been for you as the UFC bantamweight champion.
I kind of carried myself as champ. I had the champ media obligations the last, you know, 7-8 fights. I've kind of always... you know, felt like the champ, and I was the champ of the division even when I wasn't the champ. So now that I'm the official champ, nothing's much different. You know, same stuff pretty much daily.
Go ahead, Shannon.
So what can the fans expect when you walk into this octagon on Saturday? Because you're normally aggressive, you normally take the fight out. So what can the fans, can they expect action-packed? Are they gonna? Can they expect you to finish this fight and not go to the scorecards and leave it up to the judges?
Yeah, that's always my goal is to finish the fight. But Chito's never been dropped. He's never been submitted. He's never been finished. He's got 25 plus UFC fights. He's a very, very tough, durable dude. I think he has, you know, the most knockouts in the division, or he's up there. So this isn't an easy fight by any means. I know I'm hearing a lot of people say, you know, this is going to be an easy fight for me. Just because I make fights look easy, made Aljo look easy, wasn't necessarily an easy fight. But, you know, the plan is to go out there and put his lights out, but I'm prepared for a 25-minute war. He's never been finished, so, you know, yeah.
Azermaine Sterling, he's been on the record talking about how this could be a snoozer. I think if I read him saying something along those lines. Obviously, he believes he would be a better opponent for you. Of course, Peter Yan is somebody that you can't ignore. Corey Sandhagen can't be ignored as well. I want to know, first of all, what can we expect from your fight this weekend? And assuming you win, because a lot of people are betting on you to do so. What's next in the UFC bantamweight division for you? As you look at this division, what's your expectations? What are your hopes moving forward?
Yeah, I like to have options. I got a lot of options. Merab's out there. Corey's out there. Moving up, Ilia Tilapia's up there. Just one beat Alexander Volkanovski. Ryan Garcia's on drugs calling me out. So I got a lot of options, and it's good being me. Good being the Sugar Show right now.
Sean, you mentioned that. Okay, the bantamweight division is loaded, but would you look to move up a weight class and probably be a two-division champ?
Yeah, I mean, I want to do what the people want to see. I thought me calling out Ilia, people would get behind it and think that's a really cool fight. For some reason, everyone's hating on greatness. They're hating on the confidence that I have to go up and fight him. They want to see me fight Merab. So, you know, Merab might be the next one. But again, yeah, I think eventually moving up to 45 is in my future. But, you know, I'd like to defend the belt a few times.
My personal opinion is that those who know the sport and follow the sport, I mean, I'm a fan, but I don't follow it on an expert level like the Joe Rogans of the world and others. Mad respect and love to them for the job that they do covering the UFC for Dana White and the crew. But the bottom line is to watch y'all and to see y'all perform is to be respected and admired. I look at a guy like Conor McGregor from the past in terms of his popularity. And when I think about you, that's what I think about, because you're a showstopper. Obviously, the audience is very interested in you and seeing you perform. perform. You put people out. There's no question about that. You just brought up Ryan Garcia, who's boxing. He was a boxing and fight for the 140-pound champion for the championship against Devin Haney next month. You alluded to what he's talking about in terms of calling you out and what have you. Is that in your future? Is that something that you're thinking about? Doing clearing the deck with the bantamweight division and then possibly going to Dana White and saying, you know what, let's make something like this happen between me and a boxer, because guess what, that's where the big play and the big money play may be. Is that what you're thinking about?
Yeah, I've planted the seed over the years. I've called out numerous boxers, Gervonta Davis and Ryan Garcia being one of them. Ryan said he would love to get in the octagon with me. You know, I would feel like a bully, so I don't know if I could actually do that. I would kill him within minutes. But a boxing fight would actually potentially be competitive, and that could be a big thing. But that's years down the line. I got to continue to grow and be great in my sport. You know, maybe that's a 3-4 year down the line plan that I would have liked to eventually come true.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it. The one and only UFC bantamweight champion, Sean O'Malley, right here. Sugar Sean O'Malley, right here with Shannon and Stephen A. Back to you, Christine. Thanks, Sean.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Welcome back to First Take. No Giannis, no problem. Last night, the Milwaukee Bucks took their sixth straight dub with a 113-106 win over the Clippers as Antetokounmpo missed his third straight game with a left Achilles tendonitis. They've also been winning without Chris Middleton, who missed an 11th straight game with a sprained left ankle. Despite those absences, the Bucks are clicking right now, winning their last six games after starting 3-7 under Doc Rivers. They're holding opponents under 100 points per game during the break and winning by almost 17 points per game. JJ is back with us, and I'm going to start with you on this one. Who is more likely to reach the finals, the Bucks or the Clippers?
Well, let me say this. Both these teams can reach the finals. I want to be clear on that. Okay. Both can.
Right.
But the question is more likely. So for me, it's the Milwaukee Bucks. And here's why. They are the second best team in the Eastern Conference, particularly when you look at the rest of the teams in the Eastern Conference, and really some question marks, particularly as it pertains to health. Donovan Mitchell, it was reported he just got PRP done on his knee for the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Knicks are banged up. I think if they're healthy and in rhythm, they can be a contender in the East, but they're banged up. So there's question marks about them. There's question marks about the Philadelphia 76ers, of course, because they don't have Joel Embiid. Miami has never really looked consistent until lately. And we all know what the Miami Heat are capable of. I still think when all teams are healthy in the Eastern Conference, the Bucks are the second-best team. They've had, and we talked about it a couple weeks ago when I was on the show, even prior to this 6-0 streak, their defense has completely changed. It changed and was trending in the right direction. Last six games since the All-Star break, they're the number one defense in the league. And Stephen A., you asked me, well, what's different? And when I watched them play under Doc Rivers, they know what they're doing. There's buy-in to the schemes. And it's little things. It's communication. It's help side positioning. It's Brooke Lopez defending the rim. It's limiting blow buys. That's something I brought up last time. Patrick Beverley has been a great addition to them. You think about the game last night, him, Bobby Portis leading that comeback, the emotion, like all of a sudden now the Bucks have an identity. The pieces fit. The other thing I brought up 2 weeks ago, the offense was trending in the wrong direction. Damian Lillard went into All-Star break on a cold streak, 29% over the last 9 or 10 games going into the All-Star break from three. He's shot over 40% since the All-Star break. So now you've got the offense clicking, you've got the defense clicking. They look like a true contender. I still think the Clippers are a true contender, but as I mentioned in the first block, there's just too many good teams right now in the Western Conference, and you go matchup by matchup, you could talk me into anything happening out in the West.
Well, first things first, breaking news. I mean, you were nice and you were calm and you had a smile on your face when you were talking about Doc Rivers and the Milwaukee Bucks. But brother, I mean that's good. I'm with you. I'm just messing with you, JJ. I just met you on First Take, baby. You know I'm going to let that slide. You know I'm going to let that slide, JJ. You know I wasn't going to do that. But anyway, seriously, the bottom line is this. I disagree with you. Here's the only reason I disagree with you. Because the Boston Celtics look that special. I think that there's a closer gap from the Clippers to the Nuggets than there is from Milwaukee to Boston. That's the only reason I'm disagreeing with you. I agree with everything you've said about Milwaukee. I get all your points. It's just that I'm watching Boston right now. 11-game winning streak. Jason Tatum, he's my favorite, by the way. He's my favorite for league MVP at this particular moment in time. Best player on the best team in the league, et cetera. Jaylen Brown doing his thing. Kristaps Porzingis doesn't even play when they blow out the Golden State Warriors on Sunday afternoon. 45 points in the first half. You have to explain that one to me. I understand 45-point loss. I understand 52-point loss. I don't understand how you could be down by 45 in the first half. I mean, that's just a subject that we'll have to tackle another day. I just didn't understand it. But in the end, I'm looking at what they do. Top three defensively and offensively in terms of efficiency. You know what they can do from three-point range. Not just percentage-wise. You know they're going to jack up threes even though they dialed it back from about 44 to about 42.5 now. I'm just looking at the Boston Celtics and I'm looking at how lethal they appear to be. And I just think that there's a wider gap. When I look at the Los Angeles Clippers, I didn't like what I saw, JJ, Shay Shay. I didn't like what I saw against the Lakers. And I get that. And, of course, they've been struggling a little bit as of late. Just lost to okay, see if I remember correctly, but I'm just looking I'm saying if Harden shows up, and obviously there's some ifs because Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, are they going to be healthy? I mean, that's a question mark. But, JJ, I have to tell you this because, remember, I want you to use this. I want you to use that. I know you don't like mentioning the First Take too much when you're covering those games, but I want you to do this, you and Doris and Breen. The new microwave. Vinny the Microwave Johnson from the Detroit Pistons.
Of course I know who he is.
Norman Powell.
Yeah.
This brother, off the bench, he's something else. I love this kid. He's like, I'm just telling you right now, he's like instant offense to me. I look at him and I see him as a huge factor for the Clippers come playoff time. I'm not saying they're going to beat Denver because I ain't betting against Denver in the West, but I'm telling you right now, I think there is a closer gap. There's a shorter gap from the Clippers to the Nuggets than there is from Milwaukee to Boston right now.
Steven, I'm gonna have to disagree with you. For the first time in First Take history, JJ Redick and I agree on this topic. I agree. I think it's the Milwaukee Bucks. And let me tell you why. And I think it might be a blessing in disguise that Giannis is out and Dame is able to find his game. So now you pair that with what Dame is doing since the All-Star break, and you bring Giannis back, and we know what Giannis represents. They're going to be – and see, I don't trust the Celtics as much as you guys do because I saw them in the playoffs last year. I saw what they did. I saw them give it up at home. And you want to say Jason Tatum, but they shouldn't even have been in that situation. You and I both know that, Stephen and JJ. They should have never been – had to get to a Game 7 had they taken care of the business. Had leads, and Miami walked them down every single game that they had a lead and end up winning those games. But I like the way Dame has played. I love Bobby Portis last night. And you see what last night it looked like to me over the last 5 minutes, Milwaukee jumped into a zone. The Clippers have is three great ISO players. Kawhi can go get his own shot. Paul George can get his own shot. And we know hard what Harden can do. Now, all of a sudden, you force them to make shots. Don't let them beat you off. Like you said, JJ, they didn't get beat off the dribble a bunch. And now they had to take tough contested shots, and it didn't fall. And Bobby Porter's got it going in the second half. I mean, the fourth quarter. And Dame had it going the entire game. I like this for Dame that Giannis is out. He's able to find his game. He's able to find his shot. So now when you bring him back, if this Dame Lillard, I'm not saying he needs to give you 40, but if this Dame Lillard that we saw last night, and he shows up with Giannis, because I know Bobby Portis is going to be consistent. He's a double-double. He's going to give you that every game. They absolutely, absolutely 1,000% can beat Boston in a seven-game series. So I like them. I like the Bucks.
I'm glad we agreed, Shannon, because you – first of all, I apologize for interrupting you in the A-block. Let me say this. You're in Dallas remotely in your Brioni suit, all right? And the only reason – I would let you talk. The only reason I felt like you were putting words in my mouth, so I wanted to clarify before you did your full point, and okay. I apologize for interrupting. Okay, it's not a very becoming behavior of mine. Oh,
never apologize to me.
I will never apologize to you. I want to ask you guys something actually, because yes. I know you kind of talked yes. about this last yesterday, and sure. I watched some of the clips from yesterday when I was on YouTube last night.
Okay,
but you bring up the Celtics in the playoffs last year. There was no Kristaps Porzingis. He is the cheat code. Okay. Joe Mazzulla and I, we sat down in September. I interviewed him. One of the things he talked about was like having a curveball, particularly in the playoffs. To me, Kristaps Porzingis is the curveball. He's the guy when teams go to switching lineups, he can punish mismatches. He's the guy if teams want to go big,
yes.
he can go spot up at 27 feet. The other under-talked about thing, and this is not a knock on Marcus Smart at all. This is not a knock. Marcus Smart helped build the identity of the Boston Celtics.
That's true.
This version of the Boston Celtics. He was so key to their core.
Better.
Defensively, offensively, the way he played, his effort, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So key to it. So it's not a knock on Marcus Smart. But him being gone has allowed Derek White to elevate his game. Derek White and Kristaps Porzingis, you talk about the Celtics last year, they didn't have this version of Derek White last year, and they didn't have Kristaps Porzingis. So my question to both of you,
because I had a question.
Because you brought up something.
Okay.
You brought up the gap between the Celtics and the Bucks. The reason I said the Bucks, because I think the Bucks are more likely to get to the conference finals. Not saying the Clippers can't. I'm just talking about the state of the Western Conference versus the state of the Eastern Conference.
Fair.
Now, all of a sudden, you've only got to win one series. My question to you two is the gap created now between the Celtics and the rest of the NBA. I want to say yesterday you guys talked about this a little bit. The Nuggets are really the only team, it sounds like,
correct.
That you feel
that's
like are
said.
In the same tier as the Boston
that
Celtics.
That is what I said. I said that's the only team that was on the same tier. And I'll let Shannon answer the question. But go ahead, Shannon, because I got a question for JJ as well. But go ahead.
I did, and that was a discussion yesterday. But even with that being said, I still think Boston is a notch above the Denver Nuggets. And I know Denver went to Boston and beat them in a close ball game, but the way they're playing now, JJ, and I use the analogy, Kristaps Porzingis is like adding a couple of drops to my cognac, Shea by LaPortier. It opens it up. And what he's been able to do, he's allowed Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown to expand their game. They have more space because, as you mentioned, he can jump out to 25 feet and drain a three, but then you put a 6'5 guy on him, he can punish him down low. So I do like what you're saying, but I still believe Dame and Giannis is going to be more than a handful for him.
Only quick question I had was that you brought up Marcus you said Marcus Smart, right?
Yes. Him being gone. Yeah.
What about Drew Holiday being there? Is that more of a factor to Derek White looking over there?
I'll be quick. I really believe that Joe Mazzulla and Drew Holiday were destined to work together.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.